T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Moose Miller in tonight for Jordana Green on WCCO. Glad you're with us. Kevin Reed working hard behind the scenes here as well. It is 10:07. Coming up here in the second half of this hour, Dr. John Huber is going to join us. He's a clinical forensic psychologist. We'll talk about college students seeking mental health care. That number has jumped by 50% between 2015 and 16. Why is that? What kind of mental health issues are we talking about here? And just as importantly, are colleges prepared to deal with this? And what's behind all of this? So we'll talk about that at 10:35 here on WCCO. But right now, we'd like to welcome in from Bankrate.com, as we focus in on spending habits, not trying to pick on millennials, because I think we all do this when it comes to spending $4 on a cup of coffee here or this or that. One of the cash lorettes at Bankrate.com, when it comes to millennial spending, maybe some habits that we could break. Some of us, all of us, really. Sarah Berger is with us. Good evening and welcome.
Thank you.
You know, it's good to have you back. One of the cash lorettes at Bankrate.com. We're going to talk about millennials and their spending habits. This story just came out here from you folks at Bankrate.com. And basically, millennials, they could save more money if they would just cut back on some of these weekly expenses, huh?
Yeah, so we are finding that millennials are falling victim to common financial vices, like spending money in coffee shops, racking up bar tabs, and frequently dining out. We actually found that the average millennial dines at a restaurant or buys takeout food 5 times per week.
Wow, 5 times a week.
Yep.
You know, I'm trying
that's pretty significant.
Yeah, because I'm trying to remember, I'm 54 years old. And when I was in millennial age, how much I spent, you know, back in my 20s on takeout food or going out. And I don't know. I don't know if you guys were able to track those numbers and compare either.
No, I think that it's something that comes with being young. I think that when you're young, there's just a lot of temptation out there. A lot of younger millennials don't have an established family structure yet and don't have to spend money on children. So they're going out and spending time socializing and dating, which often takes place at places like bars and restaurants. So there's definitely a cost associated with being young. So I think that that's definitely important to remember. You know, I don't want to hate on the millennial generation. I think that it's something that comes with being young.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to bag on them either, because I think they're a wonderful generation. Okay. And I have one myself that I'm quite proud of, my daughter. And, you know, when I look at some of these things, because I don't know what I spent back then, it may have been just as much.
Yeah.
But when you look at the other, like, Gen Xers, Generation Y, the baby boomers, and the silent generation, how does that stack up?
So, for example, when looking at how often they go to a bar, we found that 42% of all millennials typically go to a bar at least once a week. And that's in comparison to just 24% of Gen Xers and 19% of baby boomers. And with dining out, Americans overall are doing pretty good. We found that 40% of Americans say they buy takeout or dine at a restaurant no more than once per week.
Interesting. But there's also things like coffee. That, to me, I think is one of the biggest little sneaky ways that your wallet gets sucked dry.
Right. So Americans in general are doing pretty good. We found that 59% of Americans say they don't purchase any brewed coffee or tea in a typical week. But then we have 29% of millennials saying they buy coffee at least 3 times per week. And, you know, you can turn that $20 you spend on coffee a week into much more if you put it in the right spot and watch it grow. You know, the cost of fast food and a drink at a bar here and there or coffee might not seem like a lot, but those are the types of expenses that add up fast.
Oh, for sure. And, you know, this is stuff that's after work. What about during the workday? You know, I'm thinking of lunch.
Right, definitely. I would definitely recommend taking the time to meal prep on Sundays so you don't have the excuse that you're too busy to cook, and just prepare.
What is the recommendation for the amount of emergency savings that you know, Bankrate.com is recommending out there for folks? Because, you know, I hear a pretty wide spectrum. You need 6 months worth of living to just a month.
Right. Definitely. I think the recommended amount would be 6 months worth of expenses. I also usually say between 4 to 7. Make your money work for you. Take that $20 you spend on coffee and turn that into an emergency fund. That shouldn't be too hard to achieve if you just have a little bit more self-discipline when it comes to saving.
Did you guys look at things like cell phone plans and how much that might be affecting millennial spending? And then I'm also thinking of like cable, which I don't think a lot of millennials really use the traditional cable TV package subscription setup.
Right. We didn't look at that, but that would definitely be interesting. I know a lot of millennials are cord cutters, so that would definitely be interesting to look at.
Well, yeah, because when you look at like Sling TV or Amazon and what that has to offer, and there's so many others out there, Hulu and just a zillion of them, because that's a significant expense every month that can run, you know, $50-$100 easily for just some basic cable packages and your internet service.
Right, right. Definitely remember your advice is truly never worth the price. Cut back on your expenses where you can. Put yourself on a strict budget. Allocate specific dollar amounts that you allow yourself to spend on your vice per week, whether that be entertainment or food, food at restaurants. And once that money is out, you're done.
Well, this article that you have authored along with a few other folks there at Bankrate.com as a cashlerette has some really interesting, simple suggestions, but stuff that, you know, I think people just need to be reminded about, right?
Right. Definitely. I think that, you know, for vices, I love envelope budgeting. I think it's when you allocate a monthly predetermined amount of cash for each expense and put that cash in an envelope.
Yeah.
You can visually see how much money you have left for that expense for the rest of the month. And it's super simple. And anyone can do it, really.
You know, the envelope system, I'm thinking, you know, Dave Ramsey's been talking about that for years. I mean, you track every dollar. And the first thing you want to do is, as you guys have always said, pay yourself.
Right, exactly. Pay yourself first.
You know, put a little savings aside, or even yet, better than that, if your company does a 401k and it's got a match, no matter what you make, you should be doing something in there every pay period.
Right. You should be putting at least 20% of your take-home pay towards saving or paying down debt. That's definitely a good guideline to follow.
Sure. Are you seeing more and more millennials that are picking up like second, third jobs? Like, you know, you may have a 9-to-5 job, but then maybe once or twice a week you go out and do a Lyft gig, or you're delivering pizzas.
Yeah, we are. More to come on that in the next month. We actually have some interesting data that we'll be sharing in the near future. So definitely get excited for that, because it's pretty eye-opening.
Excellent. Well, I love reading your site. I check in there from time to time, and you guys always have some very interesting studies and analysis and just articles and great reminders of ways to save money and make more money. Sarah Berger with Bankrate.com, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
It's Moose Miller in tonight for Jordana Green on WCCO. Tomorrow, July 6th, is Fried Chicken Day. And I thought, you know what, let's spend a couple minutes kicking around. Where are the best places to get fried chicken here in the Twin Cities, okay? Because when you think of fried chicken, that can really be kicked up quite a few notches. And I've got a couple key restaurants on my list, but I'm more curious, what's on your list? What would you suggest if somebody's coming to town and they're going, I got a hankering for fried chicken? Where would you take them? 989 WCCO is our telephone number, 989-9226. That's 989 WCCO if you want to jump on the phone and share with me your favorite fried chicken restaurant or place that you go, and we'll put that on our own little list here for Fried Chicken Day, which is tomorrow, when we come back here on the Jordana Green Show on WCCO. Yeah, we are into the weather of summer. It feels good, doesn't it? Moose Miller in tonight for Jordana Green here on WCCO. Tomorrow, July 6th, is Fried Chicken Day. And I thought, you know what? Let's spend a couple of minutes talking about where you can get really good fried chicken in or around the Twin Cities. Todd in Minnetonka joins us first up. Good evening.
How you doing, Moose and the good neighbors? I would highly, highly recommend a place on 55, I believe it's in Golden Valley or Plymouth, and it's called Lattice Pizzeria. And they have the best fried chicken I've ever had.
Hmm. Okay. Give me that name again.
Lattice Pizzeria, L-A-T-U-F-F-S. And the pizza rating that is real famous, that Mr. Olber's pizza rating gave it a 9.5 out of 10.
Wow. Okay,
yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm putting that down on my chicken scratches here. You got it, my friend.
L-A-T-U-F-F-S, I believe.
Okay, Lattice Pizzeria.
Yeah.
Off of Highway 55?
Yes.
All right. Beautiful. You're helping me complete my digestive triathlon. Jim in Columbia Heights, you're next up here on WCCO.
Well, Moose, I got the hot spot for you. It would be the Cub Foods in North Minneapolis on Broadway and Aldrich. They sell more fried chicken than any other location in the Twin Cities. They actually have 4 employees dedicated to the project, and they have 3 types. They got the rotisserie, they got regular fried chicken, and then they have an employee that makes a spicy version, but it's absolutely outstanding.
That's awesome. I would have never thought of Cub Foods. You said it's off of Aldrich?
Cub Foods in North Minneapolis, Broadway and Aldrich, sells more fried chicken than any other place in the Twin Cities.
Oh, that is hilarious. You know, if you're driving around.
And I know that because a friend of mine works for Super Value and delivers the amount of chicken to that store. But they have 1 or 2 cooks that they know how to make it. And it's outstanding.
Wow. That's awesome. 989-WCCO is our telephone number, 989-9226, if you want to add to our list of the best places to get finger-licking good fried chicken. If I could make a suggestion, I've actually had this, the Rabbit Hole, which is it's kind of a counter lunch dinner service joint that's located in the Midtown Global Market, which is right off of Lake Street in South Minneapolis. So, you know, and when you go in there, this joint is like, it's a bazaar of just, all kinds of different little businesses and different ethnic foods and cultures and people. And the first time I went in there, I was like, wow, what's this? But we were hungry and we stopped up at one of the little, restaurant counters in there. And this stuff is Korean fried chicken. And the sauces that come with this on the side, they're sweet and sour. They have a Kung Pao sauce and a chili honey lime sauce that is to die for. It's called the Rabbit Hole. I don't think you can go wrong with that, okay? But maybe you've got another suggestion for me.
I do, Moose.
Yeah?
The Dariette in St. Paul. It's the Dariette Drive-In. It's on Minnehaha. It is just west of White Bear.
Ooh,
and,
okay.
They have fantastic. They do. They're one of those broaster places that have those broasting machines.
Yes.
But call ahead. Don't expect just to walk up to the window and get yourself a bunch of fried chicken and turn around and walk away. It takes a little while, but it's certainly worth the wait.
Dariette in St. Paul.
Yeah, the Dariette Drive-In. They're open seasonally. They're only open, I believe, it's April through October. They're closed in the winter, but if you've got a hankering for fried chicken over the summer, that's the place to go.
Well, even more so, man. That's exactly what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
I also pulled up here just a list according to Eater Twin Cities, you know, TwinCities.com. If you go to their Eater section, sticking in St. Paul, you know, the Cathedral neighborhood is where the original revival is, but they've also got a location that is just off of 35 in South Minneapolis. Right, it would be right around 42nd and Nicollet in South Minneapolis. Might be worth checking out. Also on the list here, Sun Street Breads. Now, I would have never thought of fried chicken from a restaurant that is, you know, kind of a Nordic Scandinavian background here. But they've mastered the art of Southern fried chicken and biscuits. That's at 46th Street and Nicollet Avenue in South Minneapolis. And really, the true tale of the tape, isn't it sausage gravy? Yeah.
Oh.
Because I'm...
sausage gravy.
You and me both, Kevin. Because, you know, a chicken fried steak with a really good sausage gravy. Yeah. Mm. Oh, man. Okay, easy, big guy. Easy. But they're supposedly known for that. And Sandcastle on Lake Nokomis. Now, I've never tried this, but I've heard people just rave about this. I've had their fish tacos at Sandcastle. That's good stuff. But apparently they fry up golden chicken starting at 4 p.m. And you can get a brew there, too. That's a, you know... Perfect. What you do is you go have your fried chicken, and then you take several laps around Lake Nokomis.
You go ahead and take those laps. I'll have more chicken.
to burn that off. Also, the northbound. Have you been to the northbound?
I have not.
The northbound popped up. We were talking last hour with our guests about the Highway 55 corridor and the light rail thing and how much, you know, you've seen construction and everything and microbreweries and restaurants and apartments and all that pop up along there. The northbound kind of came out of that as well. They supposedly have a really good fried chicken at the northbound. It takes a bath in waffle batter before they fry it. Now, that's a good idea. I like that. You know, because chicken and waffles, if you've never had that in your life, you really owe it to yourself to check that one out for sure. The Lynn 65 in Richfield, they've been known for their fried chicken for some time now. I wouldn't have even have thought of that. Sure, okay. And also the Coop. That's in South St. Paul. That might be one to think about. That's at 157 3rd Avenue South. In South St. Paul, which is really north. But anyway, they've got a fryer there, and they know how to use it according to this description. Good stuff. Anyway, just a thought for tomorrow to put a little bug in your ear. Let's, is this Glenn in St. Paul here? Len in St. Paul, go right ahead here.
Well, the place that I'm going to recommend is not in St. Paul, it's in Hugo. It's called the Blacksmith Lounge. And they have that roasted chicken like they were talking about. The pieces are humongous.
What's the name of it? The Blacksmith Lounge?
Yes.
I love that name. That's good.
It's just north of downtown Hugo on 61.
Perfect. Well, and we need to get Hugo on the map here again, you know?
There you go.
Beautiful. Thanks, Len. I appreciate the phone call.
Oh, you're welcome. Have a good night.
All righty. We're going to check the WCCO weather forecast coming up here. And then on the Jordana Green Show, as I, Moose Miller, sits in for Jordana tonight, tomorrow night and Friday night. That's not so much a promo, but a warning. And by the way, tomorrow night, we're going to Chef America judge Mario Rosati. He'll join me to talk about the Italian food tour, which is taking place in Mankato next week. So, you know, since we're talking food here right now, I thought it'd be a good idea to get a plug in for that. That'll be 9:35 tomorrow night. But coming up here next, Dr. John Huber, clinical forensic psychologist, will join us as we talk about college students seeking mental health care. That number has jumped 50% between 2015 and 16. Why are colleges seeing this increase, and are they prepared to deal with that? And what kinds of mental health issues are we talking about here, and why is this happening? We'll talk about all of that coming up here after we check the WCCO weather forecast.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Hey, don't forget, through September 7th, you can come out tomorrow to Sisyphus Brewing for their happy hour from 4 to 7 and bring your pups along. A portion of the proceeds will go directly to support Secondhand Hounds. You can have a brew and help with their mission to find permanent homes for animals all over the Twin Cities. It's the Summer Brewery Tour, sponsored by the Lupient Automotive Group. Now, see, I would have thought the mission would have been to carry that doggone rock up the hill, but, you know, hey, who am I, right? Joining us is Dr. John Huber, clinical forensic psychologist, our guest here on WCCO, as we take a look at a story that caught our eye the other day when it comes to college students and mental health issues. That number, the number of college students asking or reaching out for help, jumped 50% from what they had tracked in 2015 to 2016. Good evening, Dr. Huber. Welcome.
Well, good evening, Moose. Thanks for having me on.
What do you think the cause of that jump is? 50%.
Well, yeah, that is very, very unusual and significant at the same time. I think a lot of things have happened. You know, we've got a generation, you know, the millennials are coming in. And for one thing, they have the highest rates of attempted suicide of any previous generation. It's almost 20%, or it is 20%. And the next highest was the baby boomers at 16%. So you've got that aspect. And we take a lot of that into perspective in that we had a lot of, you know, non-competitive movement during their experience in growing up in non-competitive sport engagement. So there were no winners in basketball and no winners in t-ball and football and like that, and everybody got a trophy. And I think a lot of parents tried to protect their kids from having to deal with things like failure. And unfortunately, what we found out is that the everyday failures that you have as a child that are, you know, parents look at and say, oh, that's crazy, why are you so upset about that? They actually give us the skills to deal with problems as adults.
Yeah, it's a great point. I guess I never really looked at it that way, but boy, that sure makes a lot of sense. You know, I'm reading here about anxiety and depression and
yes,
how a lot of college students, you know, seem to deal with that in today's world. You know, I remember having a little bit of anxiety and maybe a twinge of depression, but not enough that I thought, boy, I've really got to go talk to somebody about that. Why are we seeing those numbers increase?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do also with how we communicate today. It's the social media. I mean, how many of those people on your Facebook page are true friends that you can reach over and shake their hand with, you know, the next 2 days? Hmm. And it's kind of saccharine sweet. It's kind of like a diet soda. You know, you get the pleasure and the sweetness, but you get no nutritional value. And kind of that way emotionally with those friends, you get a dopamine bump when they pay attention to you on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook. But when you're sick, nobody's around to come and make you chicken soup.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting you say that, because I've been reading lately about reward and how, you know, the casinos discovered a long time ago, you know, when it comes to slot machines and gambling and things like that, the reward aspect of our brains is so powerful that, you know, companies and businesses that have learned to harness that and harvest that feeling. When you mention social media, you basically have a slot machine in your hand when you think about it.
Yes,
because you're looking down there going, is somebody going to notice me or respond to this or that? Or am I going to get an email? And that's a reward. And as human beings, I really wonder what that's going to do to us long-term mental health-wise.
Well, that's a concern of mine, you know, that I have being in my profession. And I have, first of all, I have faith in the human animal. I think we're going to deal with it just like, you know, we dealt with Elvis Presley, just like we dealt with television and then cable television with hundreds of channels instead of just three. Mm-hmm. I truly believe we're gonna compensate. We'll find a way. I mean, we've already got, you know, weapon systems that operate like our video games, and video gamers tend to be our best, you know, drone operators out in the field in real life and military. So we're making adjustments. It's just the what do you call them, the growing pains of making that transition that are difficult.
Wouldn't it also be a factor, too, that in your early 20s is, you know, sadly, when a number of mental illnesses might start to manifest? I think of schizophrenia. I don't know how much anxiety and depression really show themselves at that specific age, or if it's just something that runs the entire age spectrum. But I keep coming back to, you know, mental illness,
right,
especially, like I said, schizophrenia, that kind of stuff seems to really kind of pop up right about in your early 20s.
Right. The highest frequency of developing a mental illness is between ages of 16 and 25. And that's when the majority happen. It's kind of devastating for a lot of people, but the later it happens, the better your outcome is. I mean, if you're able to go to college and get through that before you have your first quote unquote nervous breakdown, you've already got job skills. You've got an education behind you. Versus, say, it happens when you're 13 and you don't graduate high school. So that is a difficult time for us. And it's also one of the most, it's the second most aggressive growth period in your brain, the first one being right after you're born. The second one is right through that same time frame.
Wow. So are colleges prepared to deal with this increase?
I don't think so. I know the university I teach at is deficient, and I have students going off campus because there's nothing, you know, they can't get in to see anybody. And this is not unusual. So, some of the campuses are running. There was an article out last year that showed some of the campuses are running up to 3,000 per one counselor, 3,000 students per one counselor.
Oh, my God.
So, I mean, that's not all those students need help. It's just the gross numbers of students on their campuses. And wow. It's disturbing.
You know, the other thing I'm reading here is, and you know, I hate to keep coming back to millennials because I think there's a lot of adults across the entire age spectrum that fall into what I'm about to bring up here. But millennials, you know, can be a little bit maybe more vulnerable to what's called frustration tolerance and delaying gratification because they've grown up in a world where, boom, you get it right now.
That's right. And in fact, there was just a study that came out of here at University of Texas here in Austin that showed if you have your cell phone visible and we give you an IQ test, and then I mean, 5 minutes later, we take that cell phone and put it in another room, and we give you a comparable IQ test, the IQ test you take without the cell phone in the room will actually be higher because our bodies want to take the path of least resistance, and we save energy. We conserve energy. So it sees a cell phone there, so it essentially shuts down some of the thinking parts of our brain to conserve energy. When it's not there, it turns them back on.
The other thing I'm reading here is that millennials tend to hold on to negative emotions. What do you say about that? What are some examples of that?
Well, when they get,
unfriended by somebody. You know, we know, you know, you were talking about the addiction stuff, all those social media things. We've tested it. We've managed to measure it. Every time you get attention, you get a dopamine bump, just like you're taking a drug, for example. But when they give you a negative comment or withdraw, they can't let go of it. And again, part of that is parents not letting kids deal with things. You know, when you got 3 or 4 year old kids that are arguing over a toy, you know, let the kids struggle with it because they learn how to deal with negative feelings and emotions. And if you protect them from it, they never get those skills. And I work with some patients who had drug and alcohol problems from before they were even teenagers. And now they're in their 40s and 50s and they're clean and sober, and they never learn to deal with everyday problems. And they have a lot of similar issues that our millennials do. And you're right. I agree with you on the millennials. I have some great ones that work in my office that are just amazing people. So yeah. It's just a bigger chunk of them that have these issues than we've had in previous generations. It's not.
Well, you know, and I would point to their parents, because, you know, I've watched, you know, and my daughter's now 26 years old, but I remember watching when we were parents of a young kid, like our daughter, but watching other parents who would almost like negotiate with a 3 or 4 year old about getting into a car seat. And I would just look at them like, you are, you know, I would, our daughter, you know, she learned real quick, I'm going to put you in that car seat and you're going to get into it whether you like it or not. And I'm going to strap you in and you can scream and yell all you want, but guess what? I'm going to win. And
exactly.
I would watch other parents who would sit and wait for 20 minutes before they would leave to get the kid to calm. And I'm like, You're letting them control your life.
Well, what's happening is they actually let the kids win. The 3-year-olds win.
Yeah.
That's what.
Yeah, and the, what do you think the 3-year-old learns from that?
That they.
Oh, but I'm being such a. I'm being such a good parent. No, you're not. You're raising a self-absorbed, narcissistic little monster.
Amen. You know, parenting is not for you to be their best friend. Their best friend needs to be the same age as your group. You can be their friend after they move out of the house.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Yeah. Amen to that. Yeah.
Your job is to give them the skills to succeed in life.
Yeah. Your title is described as a forensic psychologist. Explain what that means, that forensic word in front of psychologist.
Well, I'm a clinical forensic psychologist. First, I'm trained as a clinical psychologist, and I have specialized training in forensics. I deal with, for example, competency to stand trial. I deal with child custody issues in the courtroom. I also have looked at some insanity cases. We get people who are on death row, and there's actual cognitive levels that people on death row have to meet before they're eligible to actually be executed. And, you know, I've got a case right now that is, you know, might end up in the national media, but it's a 16-year-old boy several years ago was involved in a carjacking and 2 people were killed. He was with 5 adults. 2 of the adults got death penalty. 2 of the adults got 20 years. 1 of them got 5 years. And the 16-year-old boy got life in prison. And he wasn't even present when the killings took place. And
I saw that story come up the other day.
Yeah, and they moved him down here so I could work with him with some attorneys. And he's not that person. He's 34 now. This Jeez. Happened quite some time ago, and he's not that person anymore. He had just come from a foreign country. His English language assessment put him at in the mentally retarded range for that time frame of 61. So he didn't comprehend what was going on or anything else. And the federal court system looked at it and said, wait a minute, there's something wrong with his sentencing. So we're going through and we're doing risk assessment to see what his odds are of ever harming people again based on actuarial data and psychological testing. And then we make our recommendation to the court. The judge ultimately decides, I can't do that. I just make recommendations. And you know, strange things like that pop up all the time. It's really it's fascinating. A lot of it's kind of tedious, but, you know, basically forensic means pertaining to the law. So there may be some mitigation stuff going on, and the judge has a question on whether this person can actually
sure.
plea bargain. So where's his cognitive level? You know, that type of stuff. So we get involved and we do some testing, and I have a contract with one of the counties around here, and we do risk assessments for the county sheriff's department if they're looking at giving somebody probation or if they want to lock them up.
Hmm.
And my team goes in and we test them, and we put together our risk data, and based on their behaviors and diagnoses, and sometimes they don't have a diagnosis. They just want us to tell them what actuarially the data says their likelihood of committing these crimes again on. So we do
Dr.
that.
John Huber is with us. He's a clinical forensic psychologist here on WCCO. Where are you based out of, Dr. John?
I'm out of Austin, Texas.
Yeah.
But I do have some Minnesota connections up there. There's a movie coming out of Minnesota called Bloodstripe, and worked with that with Kate Nowlin, and they're out of the Twin Cities up there, and we're really excited about that. It should be nationwide the end of August.
Oh, very cool. Well, as we wrap up this conversation, you know, please offer up some words of encouragement, because when I look around us, you know, I'm 54 years old, and I just see so many of us with our heads buried down in our phones now, and I just... I love my smartphone, but I look at it, like I said, as a slot machine. And I'm really concerned that, you know, we're creating a world where we're not focusing, like you said, on the sustenance of a relationship, of right. real human connection. And instead we're hiding behind electrons. And it concerns me.
And it should. And what I do and what I recommend is that you find activities that preclude you from using your electronics. My kids, from day one, when they started getting on computers, we would create a password every night after they went to bed with 10 to 14 digits. And they'd have to do math in the morning before they could log into their computers to get the get the math combination.
Right. I love it.
Yeah, and right now, my daughter does basketball and martial arts. My son does martial arts. If they don't do the martial arts, they don't get their electronics.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a program for cell phones called RPACT, O-U-R-P-A-C-T, and it's got really horrible ratings because the kids go on there and rate it as number one. They hate it. It's only a one. But the parents love it, and I know several parents who use it, because they can turn off every feature on the phone and just leave it as a phone. It's no longer a computer.
Well, you know, Mark Cuban, I was reading about him. He actually goes into his router, and he blocks specific sites and everything else.
Oh, yeah. I do that with my kids, too.
Yeah.
That you can go in. Limits.
Yeah, yeah. Like, it's 11 o'clock at night. Sorry, you're not getting access to that site. Done.
It's off, exactly. And they have to plan for it. And, if they give me a hard time about doing that, I get my kids outside. My son and daughter, they love bass fishing. And I get them out. We get them out in the country, and we take them hunting and fishing. And my son got his first buck this year, a nice little 8-point buck. And,
Doc.
It's amazing to get them out there, and you're out there for 10, 12 hours, and not once do they go, oh, I wonder what's going on my friends on Facebook.
I got to hit Instagram. I got to go to Instagram or Snapchat. Yeah. Well, Dr. John Huber, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, anytime, Moose. I love your attitude. And, hey, there's a lot to look forward to. I think it's like rock and roll. We're going to get through this. It's just
good.
A process.
Okay.
We got to get through.
Excellent. Excellent. It is 10:53 here on the Jordana Green Show on WCCO. And our Maplewood Toyota time check is 10:53. When you need a new car or truck, it's time to check out MaplewoodToyota.com first. Wow, where did 2 hours go? Moose Miller in for Jordana Green here on WCCO. Al Malmberg will come our way here after 11 o'clock. I'll be back with you tomorrow night. I wanted to pass along this story concerning fidget spinners. You've seen those, right? The Consumer Product Safety Commission is now recommending that you keep them away from little kids because of choking hazards. But now there's another concern. They could be a fire hazard. Several mothers have noticed that the Bluetooth fidget spinner that they bought their child, they decided to charge it up and it actually caught on fire. A Michigan mom by the name of Michelle Carr says she bought her kids a fidget spinner and it caught on fire after charging less than 30 minutes. But I want to point something out here, what she did that was really stupid. She says the Bluetooth fidget spinner didn't come with charging instructions, which I kind of find hard to believe, or a charger. So she used a baby monitor charging cord. What? Well, that's probably going to lead you to, a fire. One of the chief technologists at Good Housekeeping Institute advises that you never leave a device charging without supervision. Don't charge them overnight. And make sure that you let them cool after you've been using it before you plug it in. I didn't even know that those fidget spinners had batteries in them or were battery powered, but I guess some of them are, lit up. They've got little lights on them and whatnot. So, okay. If your fidget spinner is hot, you don't want to be plugging in the charging cord. Let it cool down just a little bit. That's kind of like those, and I'm sure it's the same type of battery, probably one of those really bad, cheap lithium batteries. Remember those, what were those little wheel devices that people were standing on? I can't remember the name of those now. But they were a real popular Christmas gift a couple of years ago. And basically, it was self-balancing. It had a really big set of lithium batteries in it, but that thing was constantly catching on fire. All because they were using crappy lithium batteries, and a lot of them made over in China that really weren't made for that purpose. All right, well, coming up here tomorrow night, again, I can't emphasize this enough, looking forward to visiting with this guy. We'll be talking with Iron Chef America Judge Mario Rosati. He'll join me at 9:35 as we talk about the Italian food tour, which is taking place in Mankato, Minnesota. A lot of fun there, right? We'll check in with CBS World and National News coming up here at the top of the hour, and then a local news update, and then our buddy Al Malmberg is on the air. Coming your way here after 11 o'clock on 830 WCCO. I'm Moose Miller. Glad to be in here tonight, tomorrow night, and also Friday night here on 830 WCCO. A big hats off to Kevin Reed working hard behind.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.